we rolling? Okay. We're shifting gears from the first 4 days, and we'll talk about something that most of you will end up getting involved in. Not all of you, statistically, but most of you will. All the way from, oh, I'd say an early of about a month and a half in one case, and 30 years in some other cases. But somewhere between that, hopefully you'll only get involved in it once. We want to talk a little bit about that. The assignment that we have to discuss today, and we're going to talk about various aspects of it next week, is marriage and the family. And there is only one other decision you guys are going to make that's more important than this one. And both of them really are marriages. The first decision that hopefully you will make is to be married to Christ. We'll talk a little bit about what it says in Revelation chapter 19 about that. The second decision a lot of you will make is getting married to someone else. It's kind of scary, I guess. I vaguely remember going through the process 20 years ago, but I wasn't taking notes, and at that time I didn't anticipate teaching this class, so we're just trying to cover some things. Before we get started, though, I want to make known that you guys come from all different backgrounds, and most of them I don't know. Some of you come from homes that would be kind of the American ideal. Some of you come from homes that have been split apart, divorced. Some of you live with step-parents. Some of you live with only one parent. That's not irrelevant, but it's somewhat irrelevant to what we want to discuss. Those of you that aren't from what we might call the typical home, although I'm not sure there is such a thing anymore in America, know probably better than some of the rest of us how important this subject is. It just absolutely tears the heart, the feeling, and the soul, and the spirit out of a family when a marriage disintegrates. There is nothing more painful in this world than going through the disintegration of a marriage or watching your parents go through a disintegration of a marriage. I bring this up simply so that as we discuss these things, no one thinks, well, he's got my situation in mind, because I really don't know your situations, and that's probably fine. But all situations are very, very similar. When I hear parents say, well, it's okay to get divorced and it won't affect the kids, the only thing that comes to my mind is how stupid they are, because it does affect the kids. Hopefully, no more of you will have to go through that. But statistically, some of you are going to go through it, either through your parents or through yourselves. What we'd like to do is try to learn from some of those mistakes that have been made and see if we can be a little bit smarter. Specifically, what we want to talk about today is what to expect from a marriage. Because I believe a lot of marriages fall apart because people have unrealistic expectations. And as I was preparing for this class, I pondered whether to open it up to see what you guys think should be expected from a marriage. In one sense, that's a little unfair because you haven't been married. But in another sense, it may be the most accurate assessment of what to expect from a marriage because you don't have any preconceived notions based upon your marriage. So I'm going to open it up for just a little bit. And all through this discussion and all through next week, I would like, if you've got questions, to ask them. Don't wait for me to pause and say, are there any questions? I may do that occasionally. But when you think of the concept of getting married, before I open it up, I want you to fully understand you don't have to get married. Being single is an absolutely appropriate Christian alternative lifestyle, and it's not really an alternative. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, it'd be better if you don't get married. Does anybody know why Paul felt that way? John? Sure. What I'm going to say now is that you'll intellectually agree with, but you won't know fully until you get married and have kids. It takes a lot of time to have a wife or a husband and kids. It absolutely exhausts a lot of time. This week, I'm away from home. Both of my boys are up here. My wife's probably getting more done in the last 4 days than she's gotten done in the last 4 months, because she has a lot of things she doesn't have to mess around with, picking up and keeping us straight, taking care of us, and those types of things. So it does exhaust a lot of time. I mention that because I think especially the young ladies, I don't know the magic age, But it's whenever you're quitting going to school and start getting a job, these older ladies tend to come around and start worrying about you're never going to get married, and are you married yet, and fixing you up. You can handle that yourself. It happens sometimes with the boys, but not quite as bad. It's a little bit of a double standard. You know, if a girl hits 25 and she's not married, there's something wrong with her. And the boy's 25 and he's not married, it's kind of neat because he's independent. I don't understand why that is, but that's a fact. But don't let anybody, you can't keep them from doing it, but don't let it get to you. Because it's absolutely one of the dumbest things older people do. But some people just get old, they don't get smart. The fact that you get aged doesn't make you get wise. Okay, bad editorial comment. And you're going to have to put up with a few editorial comments as I go through this. But I'll try to keep them at a minimum. What should we expect? What do you envision that one should expect from a marriage? Not necessarily what you expect, although it'll probably reflect that. But what would you anticipate ought to be an expectation of marriage? Yeah, Troy? Loyalty? Good. Okay, somebody else. Ben. Okay, be willing to give more than you expect to get. It may not work out that way, but that's great. William? Compromise. Man of great wisdom. Rebecca. Sorry to call you Rachel. Okay, I'll put that up here with loyalty, but communication, I heard you say. John? Okay, growth is something you should expect. Spiritual, not physical. Most people get those backwards. William? Hey, we got to it. You know, if it wasn't such a thing as love, how many radio stations there'd be? There'd be about two. They'd be all news, because every song has to do with love. That's okay, but sometimes you kind of want to gag. Nobody can love all that. Did I have another hand back there? It went back down. Okay, anybody else? Oh, I'm sorry. Just speak up if I really don't see you, Derek. Honesty. That's going to be a fun one to talk about. Because you're right. But if you have a relationship with someone that's totally honest with you, your skin has to get a little tougher than it probably is right now.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that one. Friend. And the older you get, the more you like that one. Sometimes you get old enough, that's all you can do is be a friend. Randy. Okay. Put common faith. Ben. The common peasant. You want royalty? Yeah. Humor. No. If you know me at all, you know I buy into that one. Okay, boy, this is an impressive list. You guys can't see that list right there. Why don't I sit in? Okay, Ben. Okay. That would kind of be a good idea. I'd hate to marry someone that I thought was ugly. Yeah. Consideration. Shoot, I may let you guys teach this. I haven't got a bad one yet. Now there's three more. No, whatever. Ben? Selflessness. Okay, that could tie into compromise, but it's more than that. I hope you guys memorize this list the next 10 years and apply it, and then I will be a crowning success. Rebecca. Okay, I'm going to put that under common faith. That's fine. That's worth two. That's worth two. Karen. Patience. Yeah. Kind of like you have with your brothers and your sisters. Yeah. Hopefully you won't marry someone as nerdy as your brother and sister, so you'll have a head start there. Ben. I'm sorry? On who? Her or you? Yeah. Okay. Just a minute. I need another writer. Which I don't have. Go ahead. Forgiving heart. Okay. I was reading somewhere, and a guy said a good thing to keep in mind when you're a teenager is to keep your eyes wide open before you get married, and then half close them after you get married. And that's pretty good advice. We usually do it the other way around. We go around like this, squinting, and all we can see is the good stuff, and they smell good. Then you get married, and you open them wide. Forgiving heart. Rachel. Oh, would you throw me one that's wet?
I don't take that literally.
Oh, yeah. Take it literally. It's okay with me. See, the reason it's okay is they belong to William. Thank you. Thank you. I just was afraid you were going to have trouble seeing. Okay. I'll go as long as you will. Jed. Okay. Expect some problems. Okay. Because she may not be as perfect as you are. Okay. You got to keep that in mind. Okay. What else? I'm not going to milk a past due. You've done great so far. Okay, just look at that list a little bit. And I know this sounds kind of trite, but if people would take half of that list and use it, I mean, the divorce rate would, it might not be zero, but it would go way, way down. And I'd almost say if they take all of that list and apply it, it would be absolutely fantastic what it would do for this country. Absolutely fantastic. I'll leave that up a little bit. I see some of you copying it down. If you want to copy it down and you don't get it down, I'll just keep it. I won't erase it. You can copy it then. Okay, Ben's kind of saying if we just took this one, and let me paraphrase that, and Ben, if I'm putting words in your mouth, correct me. If you marry another Christian, would all of this fall into place if you married another Christian? Rebecca says it should. Jed and Eric are kind of saying not necessarily. Got some no's over here. Okay, let's talk about that a little bit. Jed, you spoke first, and Eric shook his head first, so you get to go first. If you want to, you can pass. Guarantees that those other characteristics will be in place. Okay, somebody else want to comment on that? Rachel. Can you hear her? Okay. Yeah, you can. The only one that might have a little trouble finding would be attractive. But there's things that talk about physical beauty in the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I interrupt you, or did you have a... What was the point? That's right. See, we got two levels to talk about. One is marrying a Christian, the other is to marry a perfect Christian. Chances are you won't marry a perfect Christian, because and chances are you're not a perfect Christian. That's one of the great fallacies. People say, oh, I have a perfect marriage. You can't. Because in order to have a perfect marriage, you've got to be perfect. And by definition, if you're not perfect, and I'll take the liberty of saying none of us are, you may have a very good marriage. And I think that's a euphemism people use for a good marriage. But there is no such thing in the temporal life as a perfect marriage. The only perfect marriage you can have is your marriage to Christ. Ben or someone back there have their hand up? And I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Karen. That's right. Sure. Okay. That's a good point. William? I would agree with the concept, and when we say common faith, we're meaning another Christian. I mean, I guess common faith could mean two atheists or two Buddhists or two Muslims, but I think we're using it as two Christians. At least if you have common faith, you should all agree that all of these concepts are important. So you've got a common starting base that you're both striving for. One of the big problems when you don't marry a Christian is that that person, as good as they may be, and you know, most of you wouldn't go out and marry someone that's, you know, an overtly bad person, but a lot of what we would call good people, our neighbors, people we work with, don't have values that you guys listed up here. They just don't see the necessity of it. So to have a mate that at least shares those values with you to start with, I think gives you a tremendously greater chance of success. It's not always easy, even when it's a Christian. But it's impossible is not the right word, but it's not far from the right word. It's very, very difficult to raise your family and to remain a Christian yourself if your mate's not. It's very difficult. It has happened, but it's very, very difficult. I had a hand somewhere and I just talked right through it. Okay, I talked you out of it. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this concept of marrying in the faith a little bit, since it's come up. What might be problems that would occur if you marry someone outside the church? And, you know, don't just say, well, they might not compromise, they might not communicate, they might not grow. I mean, I can do that. William? Okay. It's much more likely that if you marry someone out of the church, that they will pull you away rather than you pull them in. And the reason for that is, being a non-Christian in the short term is easier than being a Christian. And water tends to go the least resistant. This is particularly true when men marry outside of the church. Women tend to be more persistent. Women tend to be more spiritually oriented. And it seems like women have a better success rate of bringing their husbands to Christ. Now, don't take that as an endorsement, girls, to marry out of the church and think you're going to change him once you marry him. Your biggest chance of changing him is before you're married. It's downhill after that in terms of changing. That's just a fact. Ben, and then right in front of Ben. Absolutely. It puts a real stress on the kids. And those of you who have both parents or were raised with both parents going to church, you know, that's a tremendous, tremendous example. And I have ultimate admiration for those of you who don't have both parents attending church and do attend church yourselves. I'd have nothing but ultimate praise and admiration for you, because you're probably, to be quite honest, stronger and more spiritually oriented than I would be at your age if I were in your position. So I have nothing but absolute admiration and praise for you, and keep it up. Amy. Interesting that you would pick that up. Sometimes you can't put it into words, but it's a feeling. A Christian home has a feeling about it. It really does. It has a feeling that a non-Christian home can't have. And that doesn't mean that non-Christian homes can't have love, because we all know a lot of non-Christians who love each other dearly and love their kids dearly, but without that spiritual bond that really unites that family together, there's something missing. Yes. Okay. That happens, and it's sad, but I appreciate you sharing that with us. Okay, let's say you fall in love with someone that's not a Christian. What are you going to do then? Fall out of love? I don't know how to do that. What do you do if you fall in love with someone that's not a Christian? Okay, Ben? Sure. I can't count on my hands, even if I took my shoes off, the number of guys that have, quote, been converted until after the marriage ceremony, and then they're long gone. You know, it's when the hormones start flowing, the mind shuts down, and you do anything you can to get into that marriage relationship. John?
Along with that, you've got to be your damn button for them. That's really hard to do, but you've got to make sure that you mind your mind. You have to whether it's helping to get a woman's standards, how that can make sure.
There is a difference. I won't mention names, but there's a couple of young ladies that are members of this congregation that did exactly what we're talking about, fell in love with men that weren't Christians. And they worked that out, however, prior to the marriage. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful example of how it can work, but how it's so much nicer to work these things out before you say I do. Once you say I do, your flexibility is shot. Unless you want to get a divorce, which God doesn't want you to do. Before you say I do, you got some flexibility. It may tear your heart out, but you got some flexibility. You're not committed. You're not cemented together. And do the best you can to work those things out. I hope this generation does better than my generation. I hope you follow the Bible and not the example that people my age are showing for you. Because as a whole, we haven't done a real good job giving you an example to follow. We have, to a large extent, carried our Bible in one hand and done what the world does with our lives. And I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying that's a fact. Dead. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Lay some of that groundwork before you fall in love. Let me throw one out that's intellectually right, but it's emotionally hard sometimes to do. Consider who you're dating, and not everyone you're going to date you're going to fall in love with, thank goodness. But if you date non-Christians, you have a greater risk of falling in love with a non-Christian than if you try to primarily date Christians. Now, I know that's easy for me to set up here and say, you guys are going to go home, and in the congregation you live in, there may not be that many young people, and if they are, they may simply not be attractive to you. But that's one of the nice things about gatherings like this. And I'm not saying you guys are all up here to get married, because I know better now. But I met my wife at a two-week meeting in 1967. We didn't get married till 73. And we were both here in 72. We weren't married yet. And then we got married in 73. A lot worse places to play the field. Okay. I used to get a little upset when I come to these meetings and all the young people look to me like they're saying, well, shoot, who's sitting with who and what's this over here and who's he with and who's she with? Well, that doesn't bother me anymore because, I mean, you could do it. If that's all you do, I guess it would bother me. But there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's just natural. Try to listen during church, you know, you do that other stuff after hours or something, but there's a lot worse places, but it's no guarantee. There's been marriages where both people were raised in the church and it just falls apart. You still got to do these things you guys put on the list. You absolutely do. Okay. And it's tough in our world because most people think what we're talking about is absolutely stupid. You get married, if it doesn't work out, you chuck that one, you try another one. You know, getting a divorce now is like, and getting married is about as binding as going steady used to be when I was in high school. And you have my sympathy for having to grow up in an environment like that, but I can't change that. You can't change that, but God knows we can still have Christian families. John, did you have a comment? Okay. Let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 5 before we get too much further along here. Let's find where I'm at here. Ephesians chapter 5 has some things to say about marriage that you probably have gone over in some form, but I want to touch on it because it's just such an important passage. I'm gonna be starting in verse 21, and we're gonna kind of go through the most of the rest of this chapter. But I want to stop and make a few comments. So what he's talking to is about husbands and wives and how they ought to conduct themselves. And in verse 21, he says, "Submitting yourselves to one another in the fear of God." He's talking about the church, how we all respect and submit and care for each other more than we even care for ourselves. Husbands, submit yourselves. Read that again, John. "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband as in the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." Okay, let me stop there because that's a mouthful for you gals to have to put up with, to be quite honest. But what it says there is that God has established man as the head of the family. Okay, and he says, women, submit. Now that particular group of verses has been absolutely butchered on both sides of the aisle. Men will take that and say, okay, sounds good. You're the woman, I'm the man. I'll tell you what to do, you do it. You get my slippers, you cook my meals, you wash my clothes, and everything will be great. Well, that's absolutely not what that passage says. Okay? Boy, the girls are smiling now. They love this. Okay. It's not. But it does say submit. Okay? Now, let me talk to the girls for just a second. It says submit to your husband, and it means that. And any effort we make to make it mean less than that. But what it's talking about is being respectfully responsive to his love. Okay? The husband is the head of the family not because he's smarter, not because he's better, not because he's taller, no mental or physical reason. He's the head of the family because God made him the head of the family. All authority comes from God. But the man has some authority in the family because God gave it to him. And when God gives someone authority, that person has the right to use it. It's the same principle as the elders of the church. The elders of the church may not always be right. They may not always be the highest IQ people in your congregation, but they have authority over that group because God gave it to them. And it says, wives, submit yourselves. Okay? When you're looking for a prospective mate, remember that passage. If it's not someone you can respect, if he's just 6'2" and blonde and blue eyes and you think he's very, very attractive, that has nothing to do with your being able to submit to him because he's not going to be blonde and blue-eyed and attractive very much longer. He's going to start getting stoop-shouldered and pot-bellied, and there's got to be something behind all of that. You know, that's going to happen, and the hair is going to start falling out. But it does say, wives, submit yourselves. Now, guys, it's our turn. Let's look at verse 25. Husband, love your wives even as Christ loved the church. That's a tremendously important passage. Loving your wife is not an option. It's a commandment. Okay? I often talk to guys and they say, well, I just don't love her anymore. That doesn't cut it. You love her. You say, well, how can you love someone? Isn't that an emotion? No. The emotion of love is only a little part of it. God would not give us a commandment if it was totally emotions, because you can't always control your emotions. Loving your wife is a commandment. And when you don't love your wife, bottom line is, you don't love God. It's disobedient. He says, love Him just like He loves the church, like Christ loves the church. Christ loves the church not because we're perfect, but because that's the way it's set up. So guys, this is saying you love that woman even when her hair's not looking so hot, you come home and supper's not ready, or she's not lovable. It's a commandment. You love her. Okay. Now, some of these things that we put up here, I think, hit on this. Being selflessness. Sometimes it's going to mean loving her. She's not going to look like she does when you married her. You know, people change. And human nature says you tend to get less attractive after age 20 than more attractive. There's a few exceptions to that, but that's basically what happens. Too many times, people's marriages are simply rooted in the physical. And if it's simply rooted in the physical, it's doomed to failure, because that will not last. I sat in one of these classes in the 60s, and the teacher made a comment. He said, when you're selecting someone to marry, pick someone you can sit on the back porch and visit with, because you're going to spend more time, if you live in old age, visiting on the back porch than you are running around in a red convertible. And that sounds like something an old person would say. I know, I almost hated to bring that up, but it's so true. At least pick someone you can listen to. You know, if she's the talker and you're the listener, that's fine. But pick someone that you can, as they said up here, communicate with. Okay? Guys, we're not very good at picking wives. Hopefully you will be, but there used to be a song that went, looking for love in all the wrong places. And that's exactly what we do. I mean, we look for it in pretty faces and short skirts and slim waistlines. Well, there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but it's so absolutely irrelevant to the ultimate marriage that I hope all of you guys can enjoy. Okay? Girls, there's a passage in Proverbs 31. I won't take time to take you back there, but it's the one called the Virtuous Woman. And it talks about a woman whose primary function is to make sure her family is prepared for, or cared for, pardon me. I don't think there's anything wrong with a woman working outside of the home, as long as her primary focus is caring for her family. I know some women that balance those well. But if her focus is, I want to work outside of the home so I don't have to be around these kids all day, there's a real dysfunction. And a lot of people do that. Now let me give you the reverse side of that to you guys. Nowhere in the Bible is a woman commanded to provide for the family, but numerous times the man is commanded to provide for the family. If you're the head of the household, it's your responsibility to provide for that family. And that's not always easy. It means getting up when you don't want to. It means working overtime when you don't want to. It means going without something because your wife needs it or your kids need it. Unless you're very, very wealthy, and most of you won't be, it means some sacrifice. Okay, any questions on anything we've covered or anything on marriage? I've got some more material, but I want to open it up because I'd rather talk about what you want to talk about than what I think you want to talk about. Eric? Okay. Despite all the classes, however many classes you go to or books you read, most of what you're going to know about marriage when you get married is from watching your parents. That's where you're going to learn about marriage. So if you've got a good example, revel in it. But if you don't have a good example, learn from it. Okay? I think some of you are infinitely more smarter. I think some of you are communications. I'm a whiz. Some of you are probably more mature in some of these matters than your parents were or are. That's not across the board, but some of you are. Those of you that think you are the ones that aren't. Okay? It's the ones of you that don't think you are that possibly are. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of a marriage. God created three institutions. Can anybody tell me what they were? Marriage was one. Ben? Church was two. Another? Another one. One more. Ben? Is your hand just stuck? Okay. Shane, that goes with marriage. We got the family, we got the church. One more institution God ordained. Okay, civil government. Okay. And if you look at what God did, He instituted civil government to protect life. He instituted the church to protect the soul. And He instituted marriage to protect the family. Those are the only three institutions. And it's interesting to note, which one of those three did He institute first? Marriage. Adam and Eve. No civil government, no church. It's quite a while. We don't know exactly how long, but hundreds of years, if not maybe 1,000 years before those others, and probably closer to 4,000 years before the church was instituted. So right out of the chute, we look at Adam and Eve. Let's go back, and I want to make three or four points out of the relationship that Adam and Eve had. Why was Eve created? This is an easy one. Help Adam. Okay, why did Adam need... Well, besides being a man, why did Adam need help? Okay, he had the whole garden. He had a lot of work to do. What else did Adam need? He needed a friend. He needed companionship. Okay. Did Adam and Eve need children at that time? What would have happened at this time if Adam and Eve had never had children? Then? Yeah. They weren't subject to death yet. Okay, they hadn't sinned. So I think we'd have had the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve would have just kept on trucking. Okay. Whether they would have had kids or not, we don't really know. But kids weren't essential. Okay. Procreation, which is one of the reasons people get married, wasn't an essential element of the initial establishment of it. But let's look at chapter 2, and I'm going to read, start with verse 23, and I'll read 23 and 24. And Adam said, This is when Eve was created. This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called woman because she's taken out of a man. Therefore shall a man, this is the verse I want, leave his father and his mother and cleave unto his wife, and they shall both be one flesh. Okay. When you get married, if you choose to get married, don't ever forget this verse. Because what this verse tells you is something many people don't do. It says to separate yourself from your parents. Okay? Now let me get real practical. Girls, what that doesn't mean, after you're married, call mom up every morning to see what's going on and tell her how your family's going. Okay? Guys, that doesn't mean run to mommy every time something doesn't go good with your wife. The absolute recipe. We snicker at that, but man, if I could tell you how many people do that. And it really has nothing to do with proximity. You can live next door to your parents and still fulfill this verse, and you can live 1,000 miles from them and not. You know, when girls use phrases to their husband, well, mom never did it like that, or dad never did it like that, or vice versa. You establish this rivalry. You are no longer part of your parents' family. Yeah, you're still their kids, but you're no longer part of their family. You have now formed a new family. And if you don't understand that, your marriage is going to be in real serious difficulty. And sometimes this is very painful because parents don't like to let go of their kids. It is the absolutely most excruciating thing for them. Lots of times, the kids are the only thing the parents have lived for 20 years. Now you move out, and what do they got to start doing? They got to start talking to each other again. And they find out all of a sudden that that's the pits. It's very stressful for parents. And you know, your time's coming, guys. But remember this side. Be gentle with your parents. And I mean that. Because it's very traumatic. When a mother sees her little boy going over and now being emotionally and spiritually tied to another woman, that's very difficult. Or when a dad sees his little girl traipsing off, going down the road to live with some other guy, that's very difficult for them. But be your own people. You got to honor them. We're going to talk next week about honoring our parents. That doesn't mean ignore them. It doesn't mean never talk to them. And I'm going to talk to them upstairs about cutting you guys some slack when you get married. So I'll try to do what I can to help you. But don't expect miracles. You got to carry this wheelbarrow by yourself. We had to when we got married, and I won't get specific, but it worked out. But we almost had to be kind of rude for a while. Okay? There's some optimum distance to live from your parents, and I don't know what it is. It varies, but. And I've seen people at work next door. But for most of us, we need a little more space than that. Okay, take a look. Let's stay in this 24th verse. It says, and cleave unto his wife. That word cleave means to glue. It's like super glue. You glue together to your wife or your husband. And then in the New Testament it says, whatever God has joined asunder, let no man rip apart. Paraphrase. You stick to it. It's a permanent thing. The greatest tragedy of marriage in the United States is that people view it as a terminable relationship. If you enter into marriage and think, if this doesn't work, we'll get a divorce, you probably will. As soon as you start thinking about the possibility of not being married to that person for life, you probably won't be. It's just a matter of time. Because there's going to be times when you get jobs. Good parallel. There's going to be times you want to quit. And the reason you don't quit is because you got to eat. You need the money. If you enter into a marriage with the concept of I might quit sometime, then it's very, very difficult for you to not hold it together when it gets rocky. Don't do that. Okay? And I guess the third point I'd like to make, and it was up here on this somewhere, someone said commitment or trust. Trust and loyalty. When you get married, you exchange vows, okay? Someone wake Jared up. Jared, did you set up? Thank you. Okay. When you exchange vows, you not only make a vow to your husband or to your wife, you also make it to God. So when you get divorced, You're not only breaking your pledge to that husband or that wife, you're breaking your pledge to God. Don't stand in front of God in the judgment day having broken a vow to Him. Not recommended. Okay. I'm not saying it's unforgivable, so don't go away here thinking, well, my parents have been divorced, so they're doomed to hell. It can be forgiven, but it's very, very serious. Extremely serious. God made us like we are, and I don't understand why He did it that way, but I know it's right. But He made us to get married when we're young. I told you there's only two decisions you're ever going to make that are worth diddly squat. One of them is, am I going to be a Christian? And number two is, who am I going to marry? Everything after that's semi-irrelevant. You know, I don't care what you do for a living. I don't care where you live. I don't care what kind of house you live in. I don't care whether you have children or not.
As long as you're a Christian and you marry someone that allows you to be a good Christian, and for some reason God puts on you guys when you get 20 or whatever, 18 to 25 or 30, making the two most important decisions of your life when you're real young, it would seem like, wouldn't it be nice if you were